10 years went by. I was by then 47, before I was to see Bill Maxwell again. Although during that decade, we had occasionally written letters, in one of which Bill wrote, "Why haven't you come back? I have never forgotten the two of you. Geography is the great separator, eh?" I am now very old indeed, 86, and have a cold, which makes me feel 10 years older than I am. My memory, past and present, well, maybe not so much present, I never can find my glasses, is A1. To have so much of a very long life to think about and relive is something I wouldn't have imagined when I was in my 20s. When I was that age, my father used to arouse my indignation by telling me, "You get out of life just what you put into it." If you enlarge the frame of reference, he was, of course, perfectly right. Enlarging the frame of reference is all. My love to you both. B. In some of my letters to Bill, I shared my thoughts and feelings about Mother and Pop and about my own life, sometimes even sending along brief excerpts from Mother's diaries or letters, because I was trying to understand and write about what had happened to that girl Bill had described as vivid, the way certain tropical birds are vivid. With Bill's perfect courtesy, he always replied. I wondered later if I'd ended up asking more of him than he'd bargained for when he'd invited us to tea back in 1986. But he had written to me, "Only connect," Mr. Forster said, "and this we have never failed to do." And, as an inscription in one of his books, he wrote, "For Cornelius Spellman, whom I loved at first sight." His affection emboldened me to imagine him as the parent, both father and mother, I wished I'd had, and to turn to him at times for guidance. His two daughters, years after his death, when asked what he was like as a father, spoke of their disappointments. But as his wife Emmy, their mother, once said to me during a visit when I was telling Bill and Emmy about my parents' failings, "Sometimes people make great friends, but not great parents." Bill was not only a link to Mother's past, when she had been young and healthy, but, like her, he had experienced the death of a parent when he was a child. His mother had died in January 1919 of the Spanish influenza. He was only 10 years old. And Mother's father had died of a ruptured appendix in November 1918, when she was 7 years old. Bill had written about his mother's death in several of his novels, and when in So Long, See You Tomorrow, he described what it had been like for him. It was as if he was speaking, too, for what Mother, as a child, must have felt. "The worst that could happen had happened, and the shine went out of everything," he wrote. "Between the way things used to be and the way they were now was a void that couldn't be crossed. I hadn't gone anywhere, and nothing was changed so far as the roof over our heads was concerned. It was just that she was in the cemetery." When they were friends at the University of Illinois, Bill didn't know that Mother, too, had lost a parent as a child. They never talked about it. At that time, Mother seemed to be thriving. Bill, however, was not. In his novel, The Folded Leaf, the main character is a university student named Limey, whose mother's death when he was a child has left him needing more than the ordinary amount of love, as he put it. Limey becomes close friends with another student. It's the only close relationship he's had since his mother died. But because of a misunderstanding, his friend turns against him. Limey's response is to swallow iodine and cut his throat and wrists. I wrote Bill to ask if this had happened to him. He wrote back, "My novel is a mixture of autobiography and invention, but the three main characters and their relations to each other are all taken from life, and so are the details of the suicide attempt. I don't know which is worse, clinical depression or a broken heart, but in my case, it was the second. I didn't so much wish that I was dead as not wanting to go on living in a world where the truth, or what I thought was the truth, had no power to make itself believed. I also felt a conscious desire to go where my mother was and to be with her, being still enough of a child to believe, to half believe anyway, that this was possible. I asked him what my parents had known of this. He replied, "I'm sure that your father and mother knew that I had tried to commit suicide, but how much else they knew, I have no idea. I wore a turtleneck sweater, the only one on campus, until the scar had healed, so I wasn't exactly inconspicuous. My friends were very supporting, never mentioned the suicide or asked any questions. When I still had bandages on my throat, I went to a dance at the Theta House, and the girls saw to it that I had a lovely time." I couldn't help thinking when I read that letter how his friends could have been more helpful if they had helped him to talk about it, and how in some ways, like my mother, he suffered and almost died because he hadn't cried, because he hadn't experienced the grief of his mother's death. Though Bill survived, of course, he did continue to suffer. He wrote me that in order to avoid being hurt again by his friend, he said, "I walked about 25 feet away and made myself stop loving him. The price for this was that I couldn't love anyone else for a long, long time. I went into analysis because I felt that what was happening to me was what happens to a tree when you cut the center branch out." Bill's psychoanalyst in New York was Theodor Reich, who had been a student of Freud's. During one of my visits with Bill, he told me about the session with Reich in which he had finally returned to his grief at his mother's death. He wrote this same scene in his novel So Long, See You Tomorrow. He wrote, "After 6 months of lying on an analyst's couch, I relived that nightly pacing with my arm around my father's waist, from the living room into the front hall, then turning past the grandfather's clock and on into the library, and from the library into the living room, from the library into the dining room where my mother lay in her coffin. Together we stood looking down at her. I meant to say to the fatherly man who was not my father, the elderly Viennese, another exile with thick glasses and a Germanic accent, I meant to say, I couldn't bear it. But what came out of my mouth was, I can't bear it. This statement was followed by a flood of tears, such as I hadn't ever known before, not even in my childhood." I saw Bill for the last time in the late spring of 2000. I knew it would be the last. Illness had kept him going in and out of hospitals for months. Although I had written ahead to ask if he would be well enough to see me, and phoned upon my arrival in New York City. Still, when I arrived at his door at the appointed time, it wasn't his wife, Emmy, who opened it, but a tall, dignified woman unknown to me, a housekeeper or a nurse. Bill had spent the previous night in the hospital, but she insisted she would wake him. I sat down on the sofa and looked around at this room and at his clean windows. In a few moments, I heard a raspy, "Cornelia!" and turned to see Bill in his plaid flannel bathrobe on the tall woman's arm. Beaming at me, he raised both arms for an embrace. At 91, he looked both ancient and very young. I thought of Bunny, the mother's name for her beloved little boy, her angel child, in his novel, They Came Like Swallows. We embraced, and I helped Bill to the sofa. His breathing was rapid and shallow like a puppy's. I would have only a few minutes with him. "I want to see you tell your mother's story," Bill whispered. He couldn't speak in his old voice. "It seems it would even it out somehow for what happened to her." I pressed his gnarly hand. I knew he would not be around long enough to know if I had completed it. "Bill," I said, "I've been reading the books of Thich Nhat Hanh, a Vietnamese Buddhist monk." He nodded, whispering, "I know of him." and thinking about how when we die, we change form, I said. After a pause, Bill whispered, if I could come back in another form, I think it would be as sunshine. He smiled gently. Oh, Bill, then, whenever I feel the sun on my face, I will think of you, I told him. You will always be with me, Bill, because of all I have felt for you and all I have learned from you. He smiled. When you feel the sun, then, you'll think of me. Oh, yes, I will. The tall woman came back into the room to return him to bed. We embraced. As they walked slowly down the hall away from me, I let myself out the door. One fall, several years before he had died, Bill had written me from their summer home in Yorkville Heights. It's a gray day, maybe rain tonight, and everywhere a feeling of one thing ending and another beginning. The last of the peaches, and at the vegetable stand, all the flowers and baskets of tomatoes removed in order to make room for pumpkins and squashes of the genteel ornamental kind. In about 10 days, we will be moving back to the city, and the cat can no longer ask to be let in and out 60 times a day. Don't, or at least I don't think it is reasonable to, feel sad about the transitoriness of things. What you have had, you will always have, if you are a rememberer.